Slowly my strength ebbed from me, and I fell back onto the pillow. The two nurses still stood close by, and I heard one of them comment, "He's becoming delirious, it won't be long now." I wanted to sit up and say, "Look, I'm all right," but I didn't have the strength. My mind was being pulled apart. On the one hand I had the nurses saying that I was dying, and on the other my parents saying that I must go with them. I screamed, "No more." Suddenly a surge of pain shot through my body, shaking me violently, then a feeling of peace swept over me. This was owed by a sensation of floating through a dark tunnel towards a light at the end. The next thing I knew I was standing naked beside the bed. I was startled by my mother's voice, saying, "Here, Albert, put this on." She stood beside me with a dressing gown in her hand. I doubted the reality of what was happening. I paused for a minute or two and then said, "This is all a dream, you're not really talking to me. I'll wake in a minute." Mother snapped, "I'm no dream. Now put on the dressing gown, that's a good boy." I did as I was told, mostly through embarrassment. The dressing gown felt real enough. "Are you truly my mother?" I asked. "Whose mother do you think she is?" said a voice I recognized immediately as my father's. He stepped out of the mist. "Now then, Albert, we have been waiting here for some time. It would be best if you came with us." I looked back to the bed and saw a dark shape lying on it. Two distinct voices could be heard coming from the shadowy figures which leaned over the bed. One said, "He's gone, poor soul," and the other replied, "It's for the best, he would have been a vegetable had he lived." I stood there in disbelief. "Why can't they see me?" I shouted. "It's because you are no longer an inhabitant of their world," said my father. "I don't understand," I quivered and turned towards my mother. "What has happened to me? Am I really dead?" "I know it's hard to understand," she said. "Yes, in one way, you died 5 minutes ago in that bed, but only to awaken to a much greater and fuller life. Now Albert, I have a surprise for you." I didn't need any more surprises. Being told that I was dead was quite enough. Then suddenly I heard a dog's barking. My thoughts went straight to Ben. I shouted out, "Ben, Ben." Before I could utter another word, he pounced on me and began licking my face. I fell to my knees and ran my hands over his head. I knew every bump on his graceful old head. It was Ben all right. The joy of seeing him and my parents was too much. I burst into tears. I now was ready to follow them anywhere. They took me to a place to recuperate. It was similar to a convalescent home. My parents visited regularly and brought Ben with them. When I was strong enough, Ben and I were given a small house here. I have a neighbor, Miss Carter, who lives just over the hill from me. She has a pet cat and is constantly complaining that Ben chases it, but I am sure they are friends. At times I have seen them lying down side by side. Ben has also been known to lick the cat when he thinks nobody is around. Now you know my life story. Well, that's some story, I said, but what has happened to your parents? Albert replied, I am pleased to say they are very well. They have a small cottage not far from mine. Mother always talked of moving to a cottage in the country when my father retired. But it was not meant for their earth life because, both died in their 50s. My mother died first, then my father followed after 6 months. The doctors said he died of a broken heart. It was a terrible shock to me because I loved them very much. Their house passed to me after my father's death, and I lived there until I came here. The shock had a lasting effect on me, and afterwards I lived a very private life. I could not bear to become involved with anyone in case they were taken from me. I suppose this was very selfish, but it was the only way I could live. As the years passed, I became increasingly lonely, so I bought Ben for company. He was the first pet I ever had. From the moment I first saw him, there was rapport between us. I think his temperament was similar to mine. He was my faithful friend for the last 12 years of my life. I missed him very much when he passed. But, as you see, we are now together. I have never been so happy. Well, that's enough of me. Now tell me about yourself. We spoke at length about how I came to this plane and the problems that arise from one's earth life. Still, we did not solve the mystery of the whereabouts of the animals. Time went quickly, and, as much as I would have liked to have continued our conversation, I had other things to do. I thanked Albert and said I would probably see him again. As I set off for home, I thought what a nice fellow Albert seemed, but perhaps a little lonely. I was pleased he and Ben were reunited. I turned to look back at the two of them and saw the loving affection between them as they lay on the grassy slope. 6. Now I had to decide how to get home, to walk or to think myself there. I had had such a wonderful day that I decided to take the easier way and soon reappeared in my garden. On opening the door, I saw a figure in one of the chairs and immediately recognized Chan. I asked what he was doing. I was very pleased to see him but was a little startled by his presence. "I dropped in to see how you were coping," he quickly said. I knew Chan did not do anything out of hand. There had to be a reason for his visit. I was just about to ask, when he interrupted me, "I am sorry if I startled you." "You've been reading my thoughts again," I replied. "In a way, I have. You have a question about the animals here. Before you ask how I know, I have been tuning into you periodically throughout the day. I thought, as I have a little spare time, I would show you part of the answer. We will have to visit the Earth plane, and what you might see could be distressing. Think about it. When you are ready to make the journey, let me know." Chan was a very artful fellow. He knew that my curiosity would be aroused. I said hesitantly, "There's no time like the present." He smiled and lifted his arm toward me. I placed my hand lightly on his arm. A few moments passed, and we reappeared in a very misty place. A terrible feeling of fear crept me as we walked towards a building. It looked like a run-down barn. "Where are we?" I asked. "We are standing in front of an abattoir," he replied. "Animals are brought here and forcefully ejected out of their earth bodies long before their rightful time, to provide man's food." "So," I said, "that's why I sense this fear." "Yes, you are sensing the animals' emotions before they die. The whole building has an aura of fear. The animals are tense with fear as they enter. When meat is eaten, it is this fear, not the flesh, that can be harmful. It can create many types of mental and physical problems." "I never realized these creatures suffered so," I said in a rather shameful voice. "Not many people do," he replied. "They have not awakened to the fact that all life is sacred. The animal kingdom has been placed in the hands of man so that he can help it climb to godhood, not so that he can eat it." "Where do all the animal souls go?" I asked. "I have not seen any animals except a couple of pets." Chan suggested I follow him, and he would show me. We walked along the side of the building to the back. I stopped. 30 feet away from where we stood, a vortex of white light came from the ground and rose out of sight. Several people dressed in blue kaftans led the souls of the animals into the light, where the animals simply disappeared. I turned to ask Chan what was happening. "It's a long story, Jim. I can only outline it for you. The animals that are being led into the light are going back to their own group soul. Each animal has gained some experience from its earth life, and these experiences are pooled to help the group soul evolve. When the group soul gains sufficient vibration, it evolves onto the plane of man."
"You mean these animals don't survive death as we do?" I asked.
"That is quite correct," he replied. "Man survives the transition called death, but eventually the animal souls which are led into the light will have the opportunity to walk on two legs. By this I mean they will become conscious of their true identity, but this is a long way off. You must understand, Jim, truthfully nothing can die. It only evolves. So what will happen to the domestic pets I have seen, such as your cat?" I questioned. Chan replied further, "The pets you have seen on your plane are the through the love and kindness of their masters from the earth plane.
For a time they will survive the transition called death. Eventually the call within them will become too great to ignore, and they will be drawn towards their own group soul with the bonus of human love. Their human companions will have evolved to understand this, and will let them go with blessings. There is much to learn, I said. May I ask just one more question? If you wish, he replied. You are the people leading the animal souls into the light. Chan paused for a moment. I sensed he was very proud of the work carried out by these souls. He sighed and then spoke. They are the keepers of the light. This task is always performed by very evolved beings who have totally dedicated their lives to it. May I meet them? I asked. No, Jim, not until you have evolved enough to understand their work, Chan answered. It was time to journey home. On our arrival, Chan stopped and sat with me. We talked over the day's events until he decided I needed to be on my own. I thanked him for giving a first-hand answer to my question. He then left. Chan and I had deep friendship by this time, and I looked up to him like a father. I was exhausted from our trip and needed to relax and gather my thoughts. I decided my new meditation room was the perfect place. A wonderful sense of peace flooded over me as I sat cross-legged on the floor. The whole room was alive with energy, lifting my consciousness to a great height. I was able to communicate with the God force within me and listen to the words of encouragement which flooded into my mind. Listening is the true art of meditation. Many people pray to their God for help and guidance, but they do not bother to listen to His words of encouragement. We are taught about God's love as soon as we are able to accept the new conditions of life after death. He is not the abstract God that most humans on earth get to know. Here we recognize that God is at the heart of everything. He is the one power that flows through all creation. You can only truly know yourself when you understand that God is the only well from which you can draw the water of life. There is no other source. When we have this mental concept of God, we are then taught how to draw on His power. However, until then, we are not left on our own in an objective world. It may appear objective to us, but it has been created by the intangible mind of God, with His will flowing through every image of His creation and giving life to all. We are able, in a finite way, to use the same method in our own constructions. There were no bricklayers or carpenters needed to build my new house. The architect and the souls who brought the elements together built it with their power of concentration. Beyond the earth plane, all building work is carried out by the power of thought. Over the next few years, I used the meditation room of my new home more than any other. My life and friendship with Rose flourished. We went on many journeys together, exploring and meeting new friends. We had many things in common, such as the arts in which we both took an active part. I grew in understanding towards the plant life and became a keen gardener. It was on one of my days in the garden when I sensed an inner call to visit my mother. I knew by this call that she was sending up a prayer to me. It was different this time because the call became stronger by the minute. I linked onto her thought, and within moments I stood at the bottom of a bed. But it was not the bed I had so often stood by when she was asleep. The surroundings were totally new to me. I looked around the room and soon realized we were in a hospital. My mother's unconscious call to me made me realize that she was very ill. I was suddenly interrupted by a voice saying, "Please move, you will be in the way." A gray-haired man, who I assumed was a doctor, on the astral level there on the physical hospital, approached the bed and did something to my mother. "What's going on?" I asked. "May I ask who you are?" came his reply. "That's my mother," I said. "She has been calling me." "We have been expecting someone," he said and introduced himself. "My name is Dr. Forbes. As you can see, your mother is very ill, and she is not expected to last the night. I have done all I can for her. Her spirit is willing, but her body is giving up. The earth doctors have done what they can to make her last hours comfortable. It now remains for us to get things ready here so that when your mother wakes, she will be met by someone she knew and loved. Otherwise, The shock of her passing could have a dramatic effect on her. It will not be long. I'm going to see if we have a bed for her. He was soon out of sight. I didn't know if I should laugh with joy or cry at the thought of Mum being with me. While I waited, I looked around the ward and talked with other astral visitors who were also waiting for their loved ones. The doors to the ward opened, and my father walked in with two nurses. They stopped by Mum's bed, where the two nurses left Dad on his own. He held Mum's hand, which he occasionally patted, and said, "You will be all right, love, I'm here." I fought back my tears on seeing Dad in such a distressing situation. I knew Mum would be all right, but I was not too sure about Dad. I wanted to shout out, "Look, Dad, Mum will be fine. There's no death." But, of course, he would not have heard me. I waited patiently at the bottom of the bed for my mother's release. I suppose an hour or so went by, when suddenly, Mum let out a groan. Dad jumped to his feet. "Doctor, doctor. Come quickly, my wife." A nurse and a doctor responded to Dad's call. The doctor examined Mum and turned to Dad. "I am sorry, Mr. Leggett. She has gone." Dad walked over to the bed and again held Mum's hand. Tears formed and trickled down his cheeks as he looked helplessly on. He was allowed to stay with her for a few minutes before the nurse took him to one side and gave him a cup of tea. I wondered what to do next, but Dr. Forbes appeared with a nurse and two others. They stood to one side of the bed as if they were waiting for something. Slowly I misused from the lifeless form on the bed. My mother's astral body, completely intact, was now some 2 feet above the bed. The cord that we had been told about, and the one I was attached to when I died, broke immediately in Mum's case. She was still unaware of what was happening. Dr. Forbes and his helpers took control by gathering around her and lifting her onto the stretcher they had brought with them. Dr. Forbes turned to me and asked, "Would you please follow us?" We left the ward and soon entered a room that had been tastefully decorated. They placed Mum on the bed, and the three helpers left. Dr. Forbes asked me to sit while he examined her to determine whether any treatment would be needed. When he had finished, he spoke briefly to me, "Your mother is fine, no other treatment is necessary." We talked at some length. He explained that some patients were kept asleep so their subconscious levels could be worked on. No instruments were used in this clinic because the rooms had wonderful healing auras, which were infused continuously by great souls from above. I too felt the soothing effect. A sense of peace touched every fiber of my being. I could not have told you how it worked, but I learned later. Dr. Forbes then bade me farewell. But before he left, he turned to me and said, "By the way, I will be sending a nurse to look after your mother until she is strong enough to leave." I sat back and made myself comfortable. I wondered how long I would have to wait for Mum to wake. What a surprise for her to see me sitting by her bed. I daydreamed about all the things we would talk about. A knock on the door made me jump. The door opened halfway, and a man's head appeared from around it. "May we come in?" "Please do," I replied. The door opened fully and revealed a rather smartly dressed man, in astral form, level, of about 40. Immediately behind him was a fair-haired, young woman dressed in a lemon, flowered dress with white belt and shoes to match. The couple looked familiar to me, but I had never seen them before. I felt I should know them. The man came straight over and held out his hand. "Nice to see you, Jim. I've been waiting a long time for this moment." I took his hand, which had a grip like a vice. He shook my hand until I thought it would drop off. "You have the advantage," I said. "You know my name, but who are you?" "Well, Jim, this is your grandmother," he answered as he pointed towards the lady, who was leaning over the bed. "And I am your grandfather." I was dumbfounded by this news. I had never seen my grandparents when I was on Earth, nor on this plane. They died before I was born. I asked why they had not made themselves known before. "It was not possible," Grandfather said. "We were advised to leave you alone until you had developed your spiritual mind." I know this is a sad time for your father, but it's a joy for us. We shall have our daughter with us once again, and we knew you would be here. I understand. What happens to Mum now? I asked. We've door to the room opened, and in walked the nurse I had seen earlier. She spoke with a sweet voice, "Please could you wait outside? It will soon be time for Mrs. Leggett to regain consciousness. We do not want her to go into a state of shock by seeing you, now do we? It's best if I explain what has happened." The nurse ushered us out, and shut the door behind us. We sat on a wooden bench running along one wall of the corridor. We talked and talked, for what seemed like ages. "I wonder what is taking so long?" I asked. "Be patient, Jim," Grandmother coaxed. "I suppose she's all right," I thought. After all this time, a few minutes longer is not going to hurt. It was one of the longest few minutes I ever endured. Slowly the door to the room opened. The nurse stepped out and said, "You may go in now, one at a time. Please be easy with her because she is in a state of shock." I trembled as I entered and wondered if she would recognize me. Mum looked up at me from beneath the sheets. I stood rooted to the spot and just stared. My heart leapt in my throat. I felt wet on my cheeks and realized that I was crying. I don't know who spoke first, but I ran to her bedside. "Jim, Jim, is it really you or am I dreaming?" "No, Mum, it's no dream," I answered as I bent over the bed and cradled her in my arms. We hugged each other for some time but were totally lost for words. Nothing needed to be said, well, not at this time. Mum wiped away her tears and made a fuss about how she must look. I comforted her, "Don't worry about how you look. You're safe now, and that is the most important thing. When you are strong enough, you will be able to leave here." After the initial shock of seeing me had faded, I said, "There is another surprise for you." I turned towards the door and called out, "Everything is fine now." "Who are you calling, Jim?" Mum asked. Before she could utter another word, the door opened and my grandmother walked in. You should have seen my mother's face, it was a picture. They greeted each other as a mother and daughter would after a long separation. Mum asked if her father was there. "Yes," Grandmother said, "he's waiting outside." I volunteered to get him. He sat on a bench nervously twiddling his thumbs. He looked up and asked if everything was all right. "Yes, everything is fine. Mum wants to see you." Grandfather stood up, composed himself and adjusted his tie. "How do I look, Jim?" he asked. "You'll do fine," I said, and we entered the room. We had a great reunion talking about old times. Suddenly Mum became silent. We sensed she had gone into shock again. I immediately asked what was troubling her. "It's your father. What will happen to him? You know that he is lost without me." She began to cry. I placed my hand on her hand and said, "I'm afraid he will have to manage until the good Lord decides otherwise. When you feel better, we will take you to see him just as I was taken to see you and father." She took notice of what I said. Through her tears she asked, "You visited me? If only I could have seen you, my life would have been so much happier. I'm afraid it's not always possible for people to see us, but sometimes we leave our mark. I called to you on several occasions, but was heard only once." I then relayed the incident with Dad in the garden. Mum settled down again and said, "I prayed every night for you. I know. I sensed your loving thoughts, and they helped me in my early days here. They encouraged me to become stronger so that I could visit you regularly. I remember your holiday in Devon. I know it was Devon because I looked over your shoulder when you wrote a postcard to Mrs. Wilson. I also looked around the boarding house where you stayed. It was very clean and tidy. One day I followed you to the beach. I thought Dad looked funny with his hanky on his head and his trousers rolled up as he sat in the deck chair with his face towards the sun. I remember thinking he might burn his ankles. Do you remember, Mum?" "Only too well," she replied. "He was in a bad way with his blistered ankles and gave me hell for a week. The only damage was to his ankles, and they remained a funny mauve color. She paused for a moment before asking, "He will be all right, won't he? Now, Mum, Dad will look after himself. Anyway, Mrs. Wilson next door will make sure of that. She has always been a good neighbor to you, and I am sure she will continue to be one." Grandfather tapped me on the shoulder and indicated that the nurse had come in. "I'm sorry," she said, "you will have to leave now. Your mother needs rest. There will be plenty of time later to be together." My grandparents bade Mum farewell. "I will be back as soon as I'm allowed," I said. I lingered at the door until the nurse pushed me out. I reminded myself that the nurse was right. There would be plenty of time. "Would you like to come back with us?" inquired Grandfather. "We would love to show you where we live and where your mother will live. We have been getting it ready for her. We had a pretty good idea of your mother's choice of furniture and decorations. When we knew her time was near, we engaged an architect to design and build the house. Your grandmother also enjoyed making things for the home." Grandmother interrupted to ask if we ought to be going. "Yes, dear," Grandfather answered sheepishly. Grandmother held out her hand to me. Within moments we stood in their garden. I saw that it had been lovingly created. Every flower was perfect in color and size. To the left of where I stood, a small well was covered in deep pink roses. A garden bench was placed to one side of the well. A path ran from one end of the garden to the house. The most extraordinary pansies I had ever seen grew along the path. Each had been individually chosen for color and size. There were also clumps of night-scented stocks beneath the front windows of the house. As there is no night on our plane, I thought my grandparents might have a long wait for the fragrance from their stocks. But physical laws did not apply here. The air was filled with the sweet scent from the wonderful flowers. It was a pleasure to admire the beauty of such a well-balanced garden. "Do you like our garden?" asked Grandmother. "I most certainly do. Who is your gardener?" I queried. "We do not have a gardener," she replied. "It is a combined effort between your grandfather and myself. We spend as much time as we can in the garden, after the many other things we both enjoy such as the arts. The gardening takes second place. As a matter of fact, we are going to a new play written by Shakespeare. We have been to a number of his plays, and I have actually seen him. He's a funny-looking man and does not look a bit as I imagined. He dresses very modestly and has short hair and a tidy beard. When he was first pointed out to me, I was very surprised. I had forgotten that people change and can look like whatever they choose, within reason of course." We moved towards the house. It was more like a cottage than a house, but they insisted on calling it a house, so I didn't argue. The walls were tinged with pink and the door and window frames were white. It was a two-piece stable door. The top opens while the bottom remains shut. Ivy covered one side of the house and part of the roof. Just above the door a nameplate spelt out Harmony, which was certainly appropriate. Grandmother and I idled about the garden while Grandfather went inside. "Come on in, Jim," he beckoned. "Make yourself at home. Would you care for some tea?" "Tea, did you say? I have not had a cup since coming to this life. Plenty of water, but no food except fresh fruit. I don't really miss meat. The first few months were hard, but now I don't even think about it. But a cup of tea, I can't think it would harm me." "Yes, please, I would love a cup." Grandmother chuckled to herself and then spoke, "This is the only luxury that we permit ourselves. Happily, it doesn't involve the taking of life. It is the one aspect of our life that has not changed, and we do not wish to change it. You will find, however, that tea does not taste quite the same as it did on Earth." "Well, here you are," Grandfather said as he entered with a tray of teas and walked over to a small rectangular table next to the window. "There you are, Ray," he said and handed a cup of tea to Grandmother. "How do you like your tea, Jim?" he asked. "As it comes," I replied. "May I ask you a question, Grandmother?" "Certainly," she answered, What is it? May I call you Ray instead of grandmother? Of course, she said, otherwise, I feel old.